Okay, we're live. Hey everybody, how's it going? Welcome to Office Hours with Paul and Daniel. We'll be standing in for Jim today. Let's see, we got about 20 viewers on the stream, so that's a good start. How are you doing today, Daniel?
Not too bad. Happy to be here.
Nice. Okay, well, it's
in a podcasting mic.
Yeah, it's kind of it's kind of sad for you. I'm trying not to be embarrassed.
I'm going to be the host. I'll be comedic relief.
I've discovered, this is what I've been kind of telling everybody, I've discovered that actually 95% of the impulse to start a podcast can be satisfied by just getting a podcast mic and using it on a Zoom, you know.
Yeah.
And you just kind of, while you're talking, you know, you just kind of adjust it. Talk closely into it, you know. It really gives you that that energy you're looking for.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have a nice roundup of news for this week to be talking through. So that's what we're gonna go ahead and kick off, starting with a standard site integration into the Blue Sky application that launched I think just yesterday in the application. And I got a blog post here. I'm gonna screen share this thing and we'll read through it together. But this was a real collaboration between the App Protocol team, or excuse me, the Blue Sky team, and members of the community that have been, working on a standard site. So let's do a little blog post read. So now in your timeline, standard.site. So at the end of last year, three excellent App Protocol-based publishing apps, Leaflet, Pocket Blog, and Offbrand, got together and decided to collaborate on creating their own lexicon for publishing longer records, like blog posts, articles, and newsletters on the protocol. They called it Standard Site, and it has since emerged as one of the most successful community-generated lexicons in the atmosphere. I think by volume, is it at that, Dan? Do you know? Like, have we checked the... I think it's pretty up there.
I haven't actually verified that, but I would... believe it. I would guess it.
Definitely in the upper category. Yeah.
I don't think you're sharing your screen if you were trying to share your screen.
Oh no, really? Oh gosh. You're right. So that's a weird thing about, there we go.
Nice.
We have to use StreamYard to stream to StreamPlace, which is very easy to keep up with. And I shared my screen and it had to stage it. Okay. Thank you for the update there. All right. So starting today, standard.site links will have an enhanced reader in the Blue Sky app with extra actionable metadata about the post, including the publication and the author. And here's a little screenshot of it. It actually pulls the color information, I think, from the metadata that gets published inside of the standard site, like publication records.
Yep.
So you get a little customization there, which looks awesome in these examples they pulled together.
This is the first place where you can influence the colors in the Blue Sky app.
Yeah. So we're breaking huge new ground with this one. For people using the Blue Sky app, this means that when they come across a link published on a stand with a standard site record, they get this enhanced preview. For developers and publishers building on AppProto, we hope this provides more encouragement to use the exciting community-built format on your sites. We worked with the core standard site team to make sure we struck the right balance between making the Blue Sky posts more interesting and also supporting their projects. And then you can read up on the Blue Sky implementation to get to your site ready for this. Just pause really quick there. There was some conversation back and forth about like how far we want to go with this. And the interesting balance is like we want to bring in as much as we can kind of from the atmosphere, taking advantage of like what we can learn from the network. But we also want to make sure that we're not eating the traffic for the other applications in the atmosphere. And so the balance that the blog post talks about is that exactly. Like, how do we make sure that what we're doing sends people to other applications in the atmosphere while still doing something interesting?
Yeah. I love the approach that the app team took with the subscribe button on it, because it makes these embeds feel really living and dynamic while also doing what you're saying, actually sending traffic to the site and letting the action occur over there. So it gives this feeling of dynamism and like kind of a deeper native integration than you might get with like a web embed, while still directing the traffic over to other applications.
Exactly. Yeah. I imagine that's kind of the pattern that we're going to be going for. It certainly sets a good template of like, if we do anything like this, if we're ever reflecting, you know, actually kind of Leaflet does this, right? Like whenever you're on Leaflet, you can see blue sky posts in there. And it's like, these are blue sky posts. I like that pattern, you know, of like, you've got the native thing that the application does. You could represent activity from the other applications. But when you do that, you just kind of aggressively push towards the native, you know, place for that kind of interaction. That might be a good like way to do this moving forward. All right. So what does the standard lexicon, standard outside lexicons do? The core, a core component of every at proto app is what we call the lexicon, which is a way of defining the shape of data. Another term for that is a schema. Lexicons are essential for building custom apps on AppProto because they are interoperable by default. Any app can read any other app's public records. So we use the lexicons to help people coordinate around that. So if you give an app permission, it can even write records using another app's lexicons. Standard.site defines a few lexicons for publishing websites, such as a publication, which is like a website or a blog, a document, which is like an article or a blog post. And then there's a subscriptions lexicon, which is for tracking which publications to follow if you wanted to make a reader style of experience. Taken together, these describe the long form writing in an atmospheric way, similar to how the blue sky lexicons describe a social network. Because the standards that lexicons are open source, anybody is free to use them and publish to the web. WordPress, the CMS that powers over 40% of the internet, is that still right? Do we have, is that the exact number?
I also was like, that damn
it. WordPress George is an outlier and shouldn't be included in the count. Okay, well, 40%. They just released a plugin that publishes a standard site record for every post, which is huge. MDASH, a ground up reimagining of a content management system, also baked standard site into their publishing tool chain, and they did it right from the beginning. MDASH, I think, is Cloudflare's project. And then Sequoia is a command line tool for publishing blog posts from static site generators like 11t, Hugo, Astro, and Jekyll, and I assume also Sequoia has that tooling. So, yeah, obviously we're pretty big on the standard site lexicon and the value of it. I mean, it lets us start to make the web atmospheric, which is kind of an exciting
thing. It's just so cool. It's such a good success story for the ecosystem. It's awesome to see the three projects that kind of drove it forward come together. Do that. That was Pocket, Offprint, and Leaflet. Also, there's a long form interview with folks from those three projects with Jim on the Off Protocol podcast feed. So it's a really good conversation. It's awesome to hear how this all came together. And to me, it's just like such a success story and like a very atmospheric success story of people built their particular products, came together on a like more universal like standard. And then that kicked off a whole range of apps that are building on that. Even just last night, I think Samuel on the app team he wanted to get his hands dirty with like the new Claude model, and he threw it at making a composer site for standard site, and just overnight did that. And you can really only do that in a useful way whenever you have these universal schemas like this. So
yeah, you gotta get me going on auto coding pulling from the schemas. That's a whole nother topic. Yeah. LLMs, you know, coding agents love lexicon.
Yep. They love a structured description of the data.
Yes. And actually there's a funny story about how we did the backfill. This is veering off a little bit, but we could talk about Jetstream V2, right? That's like public.
I think so, yeah.
Knowledge of it. Yeah. So we're working on Jetstream V2, which is this is something that Jim Calabro has been working on that'll give us better, you know, internal tooling, but also external tooling for everybody. For us internally, we actually don't have a way to quickly do backfills. So, Dan, did you know the story about how we did the backfill for this?
I actually don't know. It wasn't.
Turns out that we had a complete archive inside of essentially an analytics database somewhere else. So we had to do this like incredibly jank backfill off of a completely secondary source to populate the standard site backfill. So just, I don't know if that's a proud story to tell, but here we are. Moving on. All right. The universe of apps and lexicons. The team building the Blue Sky app is hard at work on deeper protocol integrations that showcase the full range of everything that can be built on the app proto, and standard set is the first step in that direction. When the standard set project launched earlier this year, no one at Blue Sky knew it was coming. You know, no heads up. But we were surprised and delighted to, as anyone, to see it. And that's one of the wonderful, many wonderful things you can about working on an open permissionless protocol is anyone can just do things. All right, that's probably enough of that. So, what else we got in the show notes here? So, yes, shared the podcast interview with the Standard Site crew. I haven't actually gotten a chance to listen to it, so I definitely check that out. And I think we're actually getting into Apple Podcasts soon with Off Protocol. Oh, so is this is also now officially called Off Protocol? I think I called it.
This is Off Protocol. This is Off Protocol Live.
Oh man. I'm off balance. Off the program. Okay. Right. So live versus I get it. That's cool. All right, moving on. What else we got here? We talked about the WordPress. Oh, yeah. I got a note here, and I don't know why it's here, but we also have, I've been asked to plug that we're looking for a lead product designer, which I suppose kind of connects to, you know, frankly, I don't even know if I think it's a good time to mention it because I really like the design work the crew did on the standard set integration. But if you want to do more great design work like that, there's the job listing right there, please.
Yeah, this is just, to me, this is just a really fun, interesting design problem. Like, we're trying to surface everything happening from this heterogeneous, like, network of all of this data in the Blue Sky app in a way that isn't really disorienting to users. That's like a really cool, interesting, kind of hard design problem. And we're going to keep doing that over the next months and years and whatnot. So if you want to be involved in that, shoot over an application.
And decades and centuries.
Decades. Yeah.
All right. Well, now it's time for Daniel's favorite part of Off Protocol Live, which is the latest on permission data.
Yes. I've been working on permission data. I put out a permission data diary, when was it? Maybe 2 weeks ago or something like that, on the URI schema, and kind of used that to motivate a lot of the design of the broader system. I'm currently working on one on the authorization system, and I promises when that'll be out, but maybe next week, hopefully. I finally did like a longer pass over all the lexicons for the PDS and tightened those up, cleaned those up. I posted to the discourse forum with those lexicons. I'm looking for feedback on those. If anybody has any, I'm sure that there's still some things that'll change in it as I get further into like specifying details on this, but I wanted to get those in front of people while the paint's still wet so I can get some feedback on it. So please take a look at those. Let me know what you're thinking on it. You can see the code on that same branch right there. The lexicons are like 70 to 80% confidence level. The code is much lower than that. A lot of it is kind of vibe slap still that needs to be tightened up, but you can get a sense for the general shape of it by looking at the code. And it all works. It just might not be the best.
I do enjoy that the diff immediately goes into the superpowers.
Yeah, I know. I don't think I even meant to.
Oh, no.
The table. Everyone can see how the sausage is.
I'd be disappointed in you if you weren't.
Right on. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I'm very, very excited for this to keep moving forward. So, what do you...
Also, in that post, I put out I'm holding myself to something of a timeline. I'm hoping to have a, like, somewhat formal proposal in our proposals repository of basically the entire protocol, as well as an alpha version of the PDS by the end of June. We probably won't release that to Blue Sky PDSs at that time, but you can... If you're self-hosting, you can run it at your PDS and start using this, with the caveat that you should not build data will either have to be migrated or deleted likely. So don't build things that you're not comfortable migrating the data or losing. That's the caveat on it.
Yeah. Check this out. Discourse is showing that I can quote you on this.
Boy, they got me.
Anyway, I interrupted you there. What were you about to say?
The last thing I was going to point out is I do recommend people. I also want to make another post in the on the discourse forum probably next week, kind of talking about some like data modeling stuff for permissioned spaces. Basically, like how universal should these things be versus modality specific? I kind of have like an opinionated take on that. And this is just something that like we as an ecosystem have to start thinking through. And then if they are modality specific and one community is represented by a bunch of spaces, you start needing ways to like really juggle those. And one of the things I'm drawing a lot of inspiration on that thinking from is the work that Ziklag has been doing over with the Roomy crew on the auditor service. So I really recommend people check out the stuff that Ziklag is doing. I think this like really resonates with how I'm thinking about stuff, which is you simplify the representation at the protocol as much as possible. There's an owner and there's a list of people. That's it. And then for all of the more complex community management and governance and authorization management, all of those details, they get encapsulated in a service that drives these spaces and these communities, which is what the Arbiter service does. So I really recommend people check that out. I need to dive in a little bit deeper on the exact specifics of the lexicons, but the general shape of it jives pretty nicely with what I'm thinking on this. So
nice. Yeah, this is definitely the kind of, it seems to me this is one of the biggest remaining kind of questions is, you're introducing this idea of space types, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what all does a space type mean? And I think that's what you're talking about with like the different modalities. Yeah. And the for sure, the thing, one of the things that forces it, I guess there's kind of two things that really force it. And one of them is that each individual space encodes a group of people, which is kind of the most important thing about a space.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of depends on like how difficult it is to set up like another group of people in a separate like a sister space. Like if that requires everybody involved to like take a step or something like that, then like okay, that's like a precious resource, you know what I mean? So that's an interesting one that I'm curious about. The other of course is the permission screen, where this, which I as I understand it, was one of the biggest motivators of the space type, is being able to say like I want access to all of my blue sky group spaces, which is a hypothetical. That's what the space types enable. And I think this question of like, okay, now what kind of records are allowed to go into a space? How like defining is that modality kind of all falls downstream from some of those like hard, like almost, you know, like
border like rights. Yeah, that's exactly right. It stems all the way from the OAuth screen all the way up into what types of apps can you build and what can you do here? And really this all comes from like a pretty fundamental tension in like in the problem space of what we're trying to do, which is like, we want this really fluid universal data network where you can just kind of do stuff cross modality and across apps and all of this, but we also want it to be permissionless, which means it's a really low trust environment, which means that you need to understand what capabilities that you're giving an app. And so the consent screen for OAuth is very important, because these are permissionless apps, right? Anyone can build one of these, and you as a user can use, can, you're running your own data, you're using another app, like you need some way to like gate what they can do, but we also want this thing to be very fluid and flexible. And so those two things butt against each other, and they meet up in the OAuth screen, and you just need a way to express to users what are these things that I'm giving access to, what are these spaces, in a way that you can understand, that doesn't know what's going on under the hood with the protocol. And the space type is really the thing that hinges off of. So,
yeah. I mean, it's one of those things, this will fall out over time. I would characterize this from my impression as like an interesting question that requires thought, but is also not a scary question that's like slowing things down.
Yes, exactly. I think this is all tractable. I just want to make sure that we have like, that we have a decent idea of like maybe a starting design principle for how to structure these spaces, and make sure that the protocol allows for all of the things that you need in order to do this like safely and interestingly, you know.
Yeah. Well, all right. And we remind us again what that timeline hard promise that's absolutely going to happen was.
Yeah, written in stone. Having a proposal and a alpha version of the PDS implementation by end of June is the goal.
Got it. Okay, writing. Let me write that down.
Yeah, so setting an alert on your phone.
Yeah. Or Daniel is fired. All right. Next topic, something for the TypeScript enjoyers out there. There is a blog post that we published about the TypeScript SDK upgrades, not just updates. That's how you know it's good, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right. So first of all, we have modernized the SDK. I guess I'll do a straight review. So we're very happy to announce some overdue TypeScript SDK improvements. Over the last few days, every package in the AppProto namespace has been rebuilt and republished. You can see the full, freshly updated set on NPMX. And you know what? Let's take a look at what that looks like. Oh, well, hang on. Share this tab instead. You know, I gotta give the shout out to NPMX, right? So here they all are. Easy to find. And why don't I actually just drop that link in? Now, back to the blog post. Share this tab instead. All right. So that covers the packages most TypeScript developers depend on directly, like AppProto API, AppProto TAP, and AppProto OAuth Client Node, as well as the lower-level packages that sit under them, like AppProto Crypto. And which kind of crypto is that? How much is that crypto worth?
Boo.
This is why it's a problem that I'm being allowed to do this. Yeah, my bad. All right. The biggest user-facing change is that all these packages are now shipping as ES modules. That's right. No more common JS. And I imagine that's going to help a lot of people's build tool chain. So we have also dropped support for Node 18 and 20, and going forward, we'll officially commit to supporting Node's current LTS releases. We have been doing this on a best effort basis for a while, but in practice, we've been run behind, so we're making it part of our published support policy instead. Depending on your bundler and how aggressively your existing workarounds were, you may be able to delete some build config and possibly a couple patches when you upgrade. You can keep using require for these packages in Node 22 Plus because you can apparently require ES modules in Node 22 Plus. I didn't know that. Did you know that?
I don't know, kind of.
It's not exactly been the easiest area to keep track of.
I generally kind of ignore all the JavaScript module.
Yeah.
I scream at my dueling whenever it bites me.
I guess we should all be celebrating that we've gotten to the point where we could even make this change. Like, the reason we couldn't do this previously when we first started building these packages was that just the world wasn't caught up yet. So, hooray for that.
Yeah. The entire ecosystem's starting to shake out more.
And now it can tree shake out better. Under the hood, we've also done a general modernization pass on our build tooling. We've adopted TypeScript 6 across the code base, which means we'll be ready for the much faster TypeScript 7 compiler, which, yes, is written in Go. Bundle sizes for downstream consumers should be noticeably smaller as well, since the new ESM builds tree shake far better than the common JS output did. If you're still on an old Node.js version, you'll need to upgrade, but for most projects, the rest of the migration should be straightforward. And frankly, you ought to be upgrading your Node.js. So, you know, come on. Use that NVMe. All right. Now, that covers the existing packages. Let's also talk about the new Lut SDK. And this is actually, if you're half listening, but you're a TypeScript developer, you should pay attention to this, because this is actually a shift in what the kind of primary SDK is. So when we shipped the AppProto.com docs, we rewrote all of our existing samples and guides to use the Lex SDK. Since then, Lex has officially remained in preview with a feature subject to change warning on its README, meaning that we've been making breaking changes willy-nilly as we got it into the kind of right place. We're now removing that warning. So we're committing. And we are recommending Lex and the corresponding Lex server package for all new development. We're also adding recommendations to use Lex to all of our other package readmes to ensure that anyone in the ecosystem is directed to the newest and best supported tooling. So Lex is now tagged 0.1.0. That shows confidence, doesn't it? That we're ready, you know, the 0.1.
It's zero version, not 0.0 version.
Yeah. 0.1 means that we could make breaking changes, but we don't have to feel bad about it. That's really what that comes down to. I think that's the logic of it. We officially consider it to be in a stable preview state. I suppose that's actually what we're trying to communicate. In fact, Lex itself may not receive any changes on the way to 1.0, but what will be changing is the ecosystem around it as we polish the developer experience and build out Lex-friendly helper packages. Yeah, does this have a description of like what Lex is and does? I'm going to just in case. So like the difference between Lex and what was previous is that Lex just is designed kind of with the same level of neutrality that you would expect out of the app protocol. It doesn't assume any particular lexicons that you're going to be using. It doesn't assume that, like, the app proto package, the API package was very kind of blue sky tilted because we built it in the early days and we had to move quickly. Lex now basically is built for any kind of lexicon, and it includes tooling for installing lexicons and generating the code, and kind of it has its own almost like lexicon package management sort of thing, a lexicon.json. And so it really makes it's much better for literally everybody, including us, but it makes it just a lot easier to be doing at proto work on TypeScript, you know, with something that is just not blue sky.
Yeah. Lex is very slick to use. If you haven't used it, I'd highly recommend it. Also prompt your clods to do it. I think they're getting better at grabbing Lex instead of the API package. And we're trying to give little hints that you should be using this one as the updated client now, but sometimes it still goes back to API. So, but highly recommend using Lex. And this is kind of the state of the art going forward. Package will get critical security updates, but probably not a lot of new features in it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's also some, let's see, I don't know if we, yeah, there's still a couple of things that haven't made its way over, which a lot of this rest of this blog post is talking about, like some of the kind of the label handling, some of the helpers that we have around dealing with preferences, stuff like that hasn't yet made its way over. Honestly, that has ended up, because we're now doing agentic coding, as I have been using Lex, I just keep on just having the agent like look at the example code and just redefine it inside my project. So we'll kind of see what ends up happening with that. There's one other potentially gnarly change for brownfield projects, that is anybody that's like migrating over. The Lex tooling brings comprehensive typings to lexicon, and that extends all the way to distinguish different string formats. Okay, this is actually legit. And it's confusing at first, but once you wrap your head around it, it's actually pretty great. So for example, Lex will differentiate a string representing a did from a string representing an @URI using the type system. What this also means in practice is that if you use to pass like string types into your lexicon SDK, you now have to recast them as did string or as @URI string. Of course, casting it like that is actually, I mean, you can do that if you're sure that it's a valid one, but probably the smarter thing to do is to use some of the helpers inside of the Lex SDK to actually validate that it is a correct @URI string or a correct did string, and that once it validates, it'll return back to cast. It's there for date time strings as well. And yeah, it actually, like, at first you're going to be like, what, what is this? Why is this happening? And then once you kind of like rack your head around what it's doing, it's actually very much worth it. It's a great, utility, and not that bad once you kind of figure out the patterns for working with it. Okay. Why don't we check in? Where are we at here? So, okay, now we have a fun one here, and that is an update to PDS Mover. And how are we doing on time? I think we're supposed to go to the 45, right? Is that right?
I actually think we were trying to keep these shorter, like 30.
Okay, so 35. Okay, so we got about.
So I think we can take a.
Oh man, we could do whatever.
A little more leisurely if we want.
We could just do things. Okay, so I think we'll make it though. I think 35 is still pretty, we're on target. So yeah, big update. Dan, are you up to speed on this one?
Not super up to speed. I know Bailey put together this new version of PDS Mover. It kind of pulls everything under one big brand. Like all of the different features that PDS Mover offers, which is account migration, but also working with recovery keys, backing up your repository, things like that.
Yeah. That's the headline. It's actually, the backup stuff is actually pretty awesome. So PS Mover can now handle backups for your own app account and recovery. So like now it's kind of, it goes beyond just being a migrating tool and also is becoming kind of like a safety mechanism for moving to a PDS that you might have, like might be concerned isn't going to stick around.
Yeah.
So let's say
it's honestly really, really nice for, yeah. Even like myself, I get nervous about my self-hosted PDS sometimes. And I'm
as you should.
Boy, I could, yeah, with my chops. There's just a lot of ways that like you can shoot yourself in the foot, and if you're migrating to a PDS that you don't like fully trust, not even in a sense of like wrong you or something, just trust operationally. It's really nice to have like a backup for that. So this is, yeah, that's great. I love that.
Yeah. So let's give it a read here. So the next generation of PDS Mover is here. While PDS Mover started out as a very simple index.html page to help users migrate to a new PDS, it's evolved a bit beyond that. We still handle all your ad proto events like migrating, finding missing blob, etc., client side, so their server never sees your passwords. But I had to build a whole backend XRPC service like an app view to handle the biggest and newest feature. PDS Mover can now handle backups for your ad proto account and recovery in the event your PDS goes down or in an adversarial event. This is by far the biggest new feature, but it's not the only one. Give us a lovely little shout out. I believe we did. Gave a grant to Bailey to do this. So thanks for the shout out there, Bailey. So here is the beautiful new homepage, and I still love the logo. It's gotten witchy. That's new. Right on. Maybe that's the backups, you know, dark arts are involved. So straight to the point, let's do it. The PDS Mover Kingdom has been united. And this is what you're talking about, Dan. All of the one-off tools are under the same roof within the navbar of Redia Finding. You can now create rotation keys during migration and manually enter any that you already have. We should probably give an overview for rotation keys in case anybody doesn't know about it already. Why don't you tell the folks?
Your DID or your identity, you can set up backup key material on it that can basically, you know, override your current PDS hosts, anything that they do to muck about with your identity. So this is just like an extra check that you can have both for if you accidentally slip up somewhere in the account migration process, or if your PDS host tries to muck about with your identity in a way that you didn't want them to, then you can override that. So yeah. Recovery keys are kind of like your final recourse of ownership over your account.
Right. Yeah. The general logic is you want to like write it down. So it's a paper key, stick it in safe drawer or something like that. All right. Backups. These happen every 24 hours on signup. That was a part that actually surprised me, that it's actually a continuous backup. They're completely free to you as a user. Can sign in as well to see stats about your backups and if you have any missing blobs. On the backups sign up, you can also register the rotation key, which you can use for recovery. PDS Mover also supports PDS level backups. This will check the PDS every day for new accounts and back them up. So this is great for PDS operators out there. There will be a future update as well to allow PDS admin to restore the accounts. That's interesting. Huh. Well, I imagine we're working together with them on that. If you're interested in this, please let me know. All I ask for is a small monthly sponsorship to help cover server costs. In most cases it's $2, but please let me know how big your blob directory /S3 is for pricing. Restore and recovery, no longer need to fear if your PDS goes down or is beyond recovery. You can now use PDS Mover to restore your account from our backup service and migrate to a new PDS with your rotation key. And we now speak XRPC. You can view all of the support lexicons, and that includes Git repo and Git blob. So you can use our other use other popular app proto tools to access your backup. And if you don't trust me, oh wow, check that out. You could self-host your own PDS Mover. Along with the source code being open source, I've also provided a single Docker compose file to allow you to run your own PDS Mover stack to handle your backups. Well, brilliant stuff as always, Bailey. Such a key contribution really to the entire ecosystem.
Yes, it is. And as like the tools, Bailey's been the person that's pushing forward most on all of this stuff. And as the tools get better, it just becomes easier and safer for people to migrate to alternate PDS infrastructure or self-host to their account. So I'm always so excited to see stuff like this coming.
Yeah. All right. Next up on the news, we have Latin Sky and Med Sky. I don't have a lot of links in the show notes here, but you can find MedSkyed, MedSkyed.network, and I wonder if Latin Sky would just be LatinSky.network, maybe? Let's find out. No. I don't know where Latin Sky is, but MedSkyed is there. And this is both from Richard Farrow, and these have launched. They are built on Acorn, which is Black Sky's community toolkit. This is a Acorn is a project that Black Sky announced like right around Navisphere conference, right? Yeah,
a couple months ago.
Yeah. So I don't know if Richard is the first to pick up on this or to put advantage to it, but certainly the first that I've caught. So it's great to see somebody putting this to work. And I know Richard has been really keen to get these communities put together. So very excited to see that moving forward.
Yep. And Acorn just makes all this much more approachable to be able to spin up kind of these full stack community infrastructure things. So that's just really fun and cool to see.
Yeah, and here's the announcement blog post for Acorn, and I'll go ahead and put that in the chat as well. Oh, it's latinsky.social. Thank you. All right, next up. So this is getting kind of adjacent to us, but still pretty interesting to cover. And that is that Zentropy. I'm not really sure how you say this, just released a new small language model for content classification. So this is a part of Roost. Dan, why don't you hit us with a summary of what Roost is?
I'll be honest. Super read in on this one.
I'm trying to be good and like bounce things over to you. So, you know,
safety tooling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Roost was created as a kind of like industry consortium project to create trusted safety tools for that are open source and available to everybody. We actually have collaborated with them and use Osprey, which is from Roost, which is an auto moderator tool that is quite handy. Zentropy did here is created a self-hostable small LLM that is designed to help you enforce moderation policies. I have not yet gotten a chance to try this, but I'm really excited by their claims, which are kind of big. So it's their next-gen small language model for policy adaptive content classification. They have two variations of it, a text-only one, which is open weights under Apache 2 and free to use, and then a multimodal one. When we're talking about models, multimodal means it handles like media. That one seems to only be available to Zentropy subscribers. So a bit of a shame, actually, I'd have to look into. I'm not going to be too critical or know that, but I'm certainly curious to find out what the subscriber requirement is there, because the being able to handle media is a huge boon for automated infrastructure. Now, they claim that both deliver at or better than frontier classification quality in a self-hostable package that's lower latency and far cheaper to run. Those are three kind of huge claims. I could tell y'all from experience. First of all, to claim at or better than frontier classification quality is already like, that's a big one to make that claim. But then lower latency and lower cost are also like, if you gave me one of those things in a self-hosted model, I'd be excited. So the latency thing is no joke, right? Like we use models in various ways throughout the stack. We've explored it to create personal moderators that are like personal auto mods. We use it inside of our actual Blue Sky trusted safety system. And so for sure, like the speed that it is handled matters quite a bit. Like that shows up all over the place. Being cheaper matters quite a bit. And then quality. Right, like accuracy matters quite a bit.
Yep.
So these are big claims, and so I'm very excited to try this out and see how it goes. They have some stats demonstrating their claims and comparing to some of the alternatives out there. So like, you know, Gemma was something that we did press on recently. They're claiming better results than Gemma. I believe this is done by, I don't know what their base weights are actually. Probably something related to COPE. I'm not familiar with the base model, but they apparently, as I understand it, have done this through fine tuning a pre-existing weight set.
Mm.
So yeah, very interesting. If anybody in the community, let me share the link. If anybody in the community tries this out and has results to share, I would love to hear about it. Oh, and it looks like, oh, Miss M is in the chat talking about this, and Miss M, okay, right on. So Miss M is just sharing some details on what I was asking about with the media oriented model, and saying that the image video moderation is very expensive, and that's a big factor in how this works. But anyway, yeah, if anybody in the community tries this out, please share your results. I imagine we will once we get the time. Very exciting, bit of news here. So, okay, now it's time to just talk about a couple community things. First of all, local events are continuing to pop off. In fact, I was just at the App Proto Seattle meetup last night. And so atmosphere.community/events is your place to go to find these events. And let's take a look. Krakow? I, off the top of my head, do not know where Krakow is. Do you, what country is that? Do you know?
Is that close?
That's the kind of honesty that really shouldn't be offered. Nice. Cascadia JS, which is actually, is that a meetup or is that actually, that's a full event, right? Like
this is more than just like meetups and stuff on this page.
Yeah, we got the NYC, we got Portland,
Chicago, Belgium,
Austin. This is popping off. Chicago. Yep.
You know, I'm in LA, Portland. You already said
yeah. That. Yeah.
It's awesome. Vienna.
That's bad.
Like, I don't know, every day talking about the Aperto meetups on the timeline.
Yeah.
It's one of my regrets being in the Ozarks. We don't have any meetups. But
At Ozarks.
At Ozarks. If there's any Ozarks guys, give me a shout. We can.
You are able to add your own events. It looks like we're doing this in a really classic way, which is that you PR into a Tangled hosted repository with your event, which is that's classic. You know, that's the classic engineer solution. Yeah, very, very excited about all the meetups that are happening. And then we got one last news item for today, and that is that Aturi.2 just launched or relaunched, updated. This is by this is by Dame. It's got the classic Dame aesthetic going on here. And it is a kind of another multi-tool for exploring app protocol data. I think there's a particular logic to Aturi, which is to be, it's like almost like a link tree for app proto records. Have you got a chance to play with this?
No, it's more of like a browser extension for like giving native functionality for ATURIs.
Okay.
For navigating the atmosphere. And so you can, it lets you put in these universal URIs and then resolve it to the client of your choice, view it in the context that you want to view it in, all in this like very slick way. I'm just like consistently impressed by the stuff that Dame puts out. It's just like, it's very slick. It doesn't look or feel like kind of, with these tools, you always run the risk of it feeling like some like duct taped, like straws put together or something, you know, and it just has this like very sleek universal feel to it.
Yeah. Yeah. This is actually a fun listing right here, is like all of the different apps in the atmosphere that would have a profile viewer. And it's all taking me off to my own tab, so not everybody's getting to see it, but it's actually kind of a nice enumeration of everything that's on there. Like, did you know PinkLeap? I'm unfamiliar with PinkLeap.
Nope, I don't know that one.
Oh, it's a kind of an image. Actually, why don't I share the screen? So it's kind of a Insta style.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, that's cool. Wait a minute, created by App Potato. Isn't that the mascot? Yeah. Wait a minute, is PinkLeap Dame then?
Oh, is it? No. You were on the Aturi profile on PinkLeap.
Yeah, well now I'm at the you're seeing this, right? You're seeing App Potato.
And Aturi is created by App Potato.
No, it was saying, oh, right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thanks. Woo! All right. All right. I think that's all the news that we had prepped. Is there anything else that we want to talk about before we call it an off proto?
No, I think that's the big things, I think. I'm still, we already talked about it for a while, but I'm still reeling from the standard side thing. There's just so much excitement around that one. And both the integration in the app, the chat with them, WordPress pulling it in. I saw that like Google Open Source is migrating their blog to it. There's just like real momentum behind this standard. It's like super fun to see. And all of this happened organically and like, you know, just people coming together and making something happen. So
yeah, plus one. Yeah, we are just, you know, we're inches away from bringing back Google Reader. if we really work hard, I think it could happen. All right, so yeah, I guess we'll go ahead and close it up then. So thanks for joining me, Daniel, and thanks to everybody in the audience for joining us as well. Always a fun time. And do we do these weekly? Is Jim doing these every week, or are we the live ones?
Yeah.
It's alternating, you said?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Cool. All right. Well then, next week you should have your more professional, dedicated, Jim Ray host, back in action. Unless again, something goes horribly wrong and I have to step in. So
I think Jim knows where Blackout is. Probably off the top of his head.
you can't buy that level of professionalism. You know, you either have it or you don't.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah.
All right. Well, have a great weekend, everybody. And I'll see you out on the atmosphere. So peace out.
See y'all.